Thank you.
Right, I think while we're getting around, Mr. Croft,
Mr. Croft,
come along. So I'm really just in your hands about if you want to take us to particular parts of your evidence or just talk to it.
Yep.
Happy to do
it. I just thought
way.
It could be some brief highlights.
Yes, that'd be very helpful.
And then we can go through any questions. Yes.
Yeah.
As I said, my name is Paul Croft. I'm the Managing Director of Infinity Investment Group. I'm also a Chartered Accountant. And Infinity manages the joint venture we have with Wanaka Bay Limited, which is a 50-50 JV. I'll just highlight a couple of key points in my evidence. When I was made the General Manager of Infinity Investment Group, which is about 4 years ago, I undertook a review of the wider land holdings we had on market, and that included Peninsula Bay. And that was just to see whether there was any opportunities, whether we could do any potentially further development of any kind. I then engaged our technical experts, and I asked them to concentrate on certain things, being the visual effects, and also protection of any vegetation, and also looking at enhancing, protecting walkways and mountain biking tracks. So that was very important to Infinity. I think I mentioned in my evidence, Infinity has a very good track record, very proud of doing those things. I was very open-minded in the whole process. I'm no expert, but I was still on that land. I spent a lot of time there, and the land didn't seem anything special to me, in all honesty. Standing there, looking at the roofs, looking at the clotheslines, laundry lines, the land, Penrith, to the side. So we engaged our experts, and then I arranged a meeting with Adam Feely, the Chief Executive at the time of Council. Adam's view was that the land was actually a bit of a nuisance for Council. We'd already given them 14 hectares of land. And he felt from a maintenance perspective it was more a hassle for them. And if you look at it at the moment, the 40 hectares that were given council, in my view, it hasn't been maintained. It's not used for any recreational purposes. So it was a bit of, Adam seemed very, very supportive of what we were doing. We then had meetings with the Wanaka Community Board, and then we also meeting with the full council. I wasn't at that meeting. Murray Frost and Ian Weir were. But all those meetings seemed very positive, and everyone appeared quite supportive of what we were doing. Then it was somewhat, I suppose, surprising when we got council submission. But that was after Adam left, and we were a little bit surprised. I suppose the key thing from our perspective also, as I said before, we've got a great track record, we believe. We're a developer, we're local, and we're very confident that our values that we have will be upheld in this current proposal that you have with you today. So those are the key things that I'd like to focus on, but if you've got any direct questions about any paragraphs or anything more evidence, obviously I'm happy to ask.
Okay, thanks for that. Again, maybe I'll kick off. We put a discussion there before morning tea, team change 25. Were you involved? Were you around at that point in time?
No, I've been in Infinity 7 years.
Right.
And that's well before.
Well before
my time.
Okay.
Yeah,
great. Yes. The existing residents and where there are sections at the moment along Infinity Drive and that sort of general area.
Yep.
Can you just talk through a little bit? I know it's sort of mentioned there in the evidence, but there's a sort of this, you've been sort of what's a better word, pre-warning them, but you've been telling them that there is this possibility of a zone change in that area.
Correct.
Can you just tell us about what that actually involved?
The best thing to do for that is actually if I turn that border out.
Sure.
That's all right.
Yep. That'd be very helpful.
No. So, as part of our, when we decided that there might be an option to do this, we then basically blanked out all this land and all our marketing material here. And so all the buyers who bought sections all along here, and actually majority of all the stage, knew, and when they were talking to our sales team, we informed them that we potentially were looking at doing something
right
on this land.
And what date was that?
Can't remember the exact date, it's in my evidence. I think it was 2013, 2012, 2013.
Right.
You remember?
Yeah. In the area where there's no complaints covenant,
yep,
is that in a specific geographic area or is it applied across the whole of the Peninsula Bay?
It's the whole subdivision from about here onwards. But we did write to all the people that were on this boundary,
yes,
and just told them what we were doing as well. And we also wrote to all the people that lived in the park along this boundary as well.
Yes,
I think there were 40 people that we wrote to.
Yes.
We didn't get any real significant feedback or response.
Right. Now, this question, don't take it the wrong way. I guess it's, I mean, as you talked about, you know, the reputation of the firm is important, saying what you're going to do is, you know, important to you, and I
yep
appreciate that point.
Yep.
I guess if you look back at the history of this, and this sort of open space zone land, and there's sort of been this connection back into the resource yep consent process saying, you know, this land needs to be vested at some point,
yep,
seems to be a continual deferment of that vesting.
Yep.
I mean, some people could take that as saying, well, there was a commitment made, but for whatever reason, it's been deferred and deferred and deferred.
Yep.
So, I mean, I know, again, this is sort of a black and white question, isn't it? There's good intentions there around revegetation and, you know, all the rest of it for these plan change.
What's the answer to that?
Yeah, what's the certainty? Yeah.
Well, yeah, it is private land, as you mentioned,
yes,
and we do have rights under, you know, the RMA and the planning perspective. But what I think we've got now is a much better outcome. You know, we've got better tracks for walkers as well, and for mountain bikers.
Yes.
You've got protection of the vegetation.
Yeah.
And also you've got a contribution to other tracks in the area where, you know, whether there is a perceived loss of recreation. I don't perceive that there is one, but yeah, we'll see there may be, so we'll try to find a better yeah solution for that as well. So, you know, we think it's a win-win outcome for everybody. And obviously, you know, we don't vest that land, we don't have a condition with council that we don't vest that land until we finish our last section. So we still have, you know, the rights to, I suppose, under the RMA to re-look at it.
Hmm. I mean, I can understand the merits that have been posed through the plan change. I guess it's for us is there's sufficient certainty about the mechanisms to achieve those outcomes. I mean, on the face of it, there's a lot there in the plan. I mean, it's just, I guess, it's sort of a question that goes through your mind about, you know, previous commitments and the commitments that have been made around this, but certainly see that's a planning sort of issue, so I'm not trying to put them on the spot
yep
or anything. The condition that's there around the open space zoning to be vested, again, I can see there was some footnoted material in some of the evidence. It talked about, I guess this question about deferment, yes, is that actually in some resource consent that's been issued or something?
It is a consent that's been issued by council.
Right,
yep.
Okay.
We don't have to vest that land over until the last five sections are currently titled.
Right, so that was in a condition of a previous or a current subdivision consent or whatever it might be.
You might have probably been there, but that's my
yes yeah. Mr. Bolton has been involved right through the consenting process, so perhaps we could
have... When you come, you can
yes
take us through that a little bit. Yeah,
yes,
that would be helpful just to understand the context.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a condition that allows a effectively allows vesting to sort of sit alongside, instead of looking at the plan change as a whole and saying, okay, there's this much area to be vested, there's this much plan change to be developed.
Yes.
What it's done is allow that to happen sequentially as time's gone on. So some development's been done in stages, and some open space has been vested, and then some more development's been done, some more open space is vested, and some more development's been done, some more open space has been vested. Right. Like it's kept up with development, if you like.
Yes, yes.
And this is the last bit.
Well, it's an area that's a little complex for council because council doesn't want a whole lot of land it's got to look after before it needs to get it. So it tends to be staged and there's often vexed questions around what you get, when you get it, and how much of it.
And I think what it looks like.
A situation just like that here.
Oh, no, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was interesting talking to Adam. You know, his view at the time was he didn't want it. It was a nuisance, you know, from a maintenance perspective. And, you know, the fire risks that we have, I mentioned in my report, we constantly get complaints from the neighbours on the boundary because, you know, council doesn't want to mow it.
Sure. Yes, yes. But Mr. Feely's not in the room.
No, no,
no.
I
guess it would be just... if there's any, was there any reasoning in that resource consent condition about why the deferment was appropriate or necessary? Or
I don't believe so.
Perhaps cover that.
Yes.
No,
I think just when you get to do your summary and your bind, just a bit nervous about are we sort of cutting across? I mean, there's obviously the consent, being moved through.
Yeah.
And we'll be doing a plan change, not a resource consent, obviously, different matter. But again, if there's any sort of material there to that consent side of things, that might be relevant to our deliberations, that's all.
Right.
Yeah.
Mr. Bodding's well-placed task.
Okay,
great. Right. He's been involved right throughout from the plan change right through and all of the consenting steps.
Yes. Final question I've got is about the demand side of the equation. You know, the houses to be provided. I can understand that's a desirable, helpful thing in the scheme of things. I guess you look across Wanaka though now. Wanaka, I don't know all, but three parks. I mean, there's a number of developments underway, isn't there, in Wanaka? Actually, growing quite pretty fast. So it's not like there's a sort of a real constraint. It's not like an Auckland situation where there's a real constraint on land supply and there's big sort of issues about land supply and the need to find more land to address housing issues. Are we sort of in a different, what your opinion, are we sort of in a different context down here in Wanaka?
We're seeing significant demand for land in Wanaka at the moment. And just to give you some examples, we sold a section of Riverside Park a year ago for $175,000. Resold a few weeks ago for over $300,000.
Yes.
And so, you know, there's huge amounts of demand for residential sections in Wanaka at the moment. Yes, there might be land zoned at, North Lake, etc. But it takes time bringing those onto market. You know, the beauty about this, I suppose, is much quicker. We're already established a subdivision. All the infrastructure is already in place. It's much quicker for us to bring these sections onto market. And it also gives buyers a greater choice, competitive nature, and a different product. You look at North Lake and Three Parks, they're much smaller sections. These are slightly bigger and different aspects. So I think having a variety of sections with a variety of vendors is a good thing for everybody.
To distribute those, and then you've got them to hand while you're
really helpful.
It's quite hard to read, but
yes, no, that's really helpful.
The one in the middle, the second one that was painted around shows the trail. Okay. And the one that you're getting now, I couldn't quite step from there. The working plan, thank
Right, no, sorry, thank you. We were just double-checking, because now we've got two copies of the landscape concept plan.
Yes.
Yeah, and one's got revision L, and I just got handed up, I think it was just before morning tea, got handed up this one, it's revision M.
Revision M, correct.
Yeah, which has got all sort of handwritten notes on it.
Yeah.
So that's a sort of more recent,
correct, yeah.
That's the sort of most up-to-date version.
Yes.
Of,
yes,
that one.
Yeah. Some additional
that's okay.
Survey we've just done on-site on Friday.
Right.
Some of the vegetation areas that's proposed in the past. Yeah, we're looking at just trying to balance the tussock, which Barry will be able to cover off as
something we have to take this one. Okay, great. Yep, okay, thanks, Mr. Potter. So thank you. And so your colleague was very helpful this morning on site.
Well, I'll send him up just to check the protocols, but he obviously ran into you guys up there, did he?
Managed to
get you back down here in time.
We saw a pole moving through the vegetation.
Yes, there's been a lot of that that's been happening. Right.
I'm hoping it's taking it from an incorrect place and putting it in a correct place.
Pete's a bit of a triathlete, so he's actually up there mountain biking yesterday and also was checking out to make sure everything was in place.
Right.
So he's very familiar with the site. Okay, I've been involved with the Peninsula Bay Development for just coming up 12 years now. I started in Wanaka in 2004 and started out in a mid-level surveying role and became involved with Peninsula Bay from surveying and set out point of view dealing with building platforms and preparing plans for the two variations, 15 and 25. I moved into then presenting evidence for variation 25, looking at infrastructure assessments, mainly around stormwater and earthworks, the two big items that I've experienced and over the years. Stormwater at Pembova achieved quite a very good outcome of use of low impact design stormwater techniques, which were really ahead of their time by in the area by 10 years. You know, we were using treatment swales and attenuation ponds, and now that's only now just become a requirement under new engineering standards. I also have used the Pembay site and the surrounding area quite extensively on a personal level for recreation over the years, so I'm very, very familiar with it. I regularly bike and run across the site. I've certainly seen a lot of things come and go over the years. I've had a lot of involvement and quite a few tweaks and enhancements to the various consents in place, including changes to the ODMP.
Most of them have been enhancements depending on feedback from the sales team at Infinity, lot orientation, etc. But also meeting with obviously council representatives who have dealt with quite a few different people over the years about the various tracks and locations. And there's been quite a, there was quite a lot of work put in initially during the initial engineering design on where they should go. But that was with previous past council employees who since left. So now we've had a new round of employees come in and new changes. So it's interesting to see what has happened in the last 10 years. So in terms of consent-wise, my evidence covers off my involvement in the various earthworks that have required for the plan change. The consenting side of the amount of reserve land that's been vested is certainly a lot more than what the minimum requirement is. You can see from the figures in my evidence what has been vested and what is remaining to be vested. That's in paragraphs 22 and 23. Now, in terms of engineering for the zone change, it's relatively straightforward. There's no real issues from an engineering point of view to allow the plan change to go ahead. The existing infrastructure in Peninsula Bay is well set up to service the proposed re-zone area for road access, drainage, and all the other telecom, etc., and power services. Now, in the some of the submissions, there was quite a few relating to erosion effects. It was one point that was raised by some of the submitters. What we've found throughout our work in Peninsula Bay is that the soil underneath is quite fine-grained, and if it's exposed, can rapidly erode. And that's the reason why we've all the tracks we've formed to date, we've stabilised with metal. And that locks the surface down and prevents the erosion from happening. The existing bike tracks over the years have developed really ad hoc from trimming of vegetation and then progressive reuse has stripped off that topsoil and exposed a lot of the fine-grained soil underneath. And there was parts of the track, I don't know if you had a look on site, did you walk on the bike tracks at all?
Just a little bit, yeah.
A little
yeah.
bit? Not the steep sections?
We could give me a bit of drop-off.
Yeah, there's two quite steeply eroded sections. There's a portion through. So on the trails map here, we've drawn the existing trails from the Bike Chronicle website. They have a website that has a link to a trail map. The Thread the Needle track starts down here near Venus Landing and follows a clear pathway through the middle of Penn Bay site and then gets to a point halfway along before it loops back and joins back down through. There's two sections on the track that are quite steep and eroded. At the top, if you found the power pole, which is quite a good reference point if you're on site. There's a section of track below there that's it's not too bad, but it is starting to erode and get silt runoff. But further on down where the track meets near lock 20, where it meets the Mount Gold access comes through, there's quite a steep section through there, which is quite heavily rutted, and that has quite a few, it's quite in size, there's some photographs and what you can see. And that's an example of what can happen if you leave the, don't stabilise it. I mean, over time, it will just get worse and worse and worse. And left unchecked, eventually you're going to end up with quite a very big major problem there. And also safety as well, as it gets in size, it almost becomes impossible to bike unless you start to bike outside the trail, which is happening. You know, the trail gets wider and wider and wider. Down over at this point here, where the trail returns, there's quite a steep drop-off, which is quite heavily eroded. So the actual formation of these tracks has been fairly ad hoc over time, and certainly from a safety point of view, some things I believe do need to be addressed, particularly if there's going to be more users going to come into the area. So the design of what we've achieved here as well is looking to separate out the users of the tracks, and that really reduces the conflict, which is quite a major problem for some of the submitters on the conflict between walkers and bikers. Now, there are also some evidence I'll look at the effects of some of the numbers around vegetation clearance. My experience with building tracks in the earlier stages of Penn Bay, particularly in stage 3B, 3A, up in this area through here, in the Eastern Reserve, and also through this reserve, which has quite a similar level of Kanuka to what is in the proposed rezoning area. We were able to achieve quite a high standard of track by not removing a lot of vegetation. We could selectively target a specific route through the Kanuka. Now, we may have to take out one tree, but taking out one or two trees can open up quite a clear pathway while leaving ones on the side, combined with the trimming of tree branches. It's not like you have to, if you've got a 2-metre-wide path, that you have to clear a 2 or 3 or 4 metre swathe right through the vegetation. You can actually carefully thread your way through and maintain quite a nice canopy above the track. And you'll see that if you walk through these tracks here in those photos, that we've actually got quite a nice outcome to those tracks. So I feel like some of the figures that have been stated for that vegetation removal in regards to the tracks and also the fencing are slightly overstated in terms of what we're actually being reality on the ground when we go to build. Now, in my evidence, I covered off some around some of the savings to do with maintenance costs. Now, I had looked at that it could be up towards $7,500 a year in savings. Now, I need to acknowledge that further assessment has to be carried out as to what those exact savings will be. I feel that as the plan change has developed now with the different planting areas, further work will need to be carried out with council just to really nail down what those ongoing numbers would be. Certainly within the first 5 years, there's an increased need to maintain things. You build a track and it starts to get heavy use, you by no means get it perfect the first time. You maybe need to get in there and look at some corners and further metal depending on how heavy the use has been used by bikers, particularly because they can cause quite a lot of damage. So I feel like there is a need to look at further work around to confirm those numbers, and there has been quite a varied evidence from Vicky Jones as to what those numbers would be. So I just want to acknowledge that there is a need to work further with council and develop now we develop quite detailed maintenance plans which then reflect what those ongoing costs would be. In terms of access to the existing Penn Bay site, when we did the work originally and started earthworks, we put safety fences across through the site to keep people out of the earthworks area. And that changed the patterns a wee bit in terms of where people walked and encouraged people to access through from Mount Gold Place a wee bit, which of course has no legal access. And that's been carried through into Bike Wanaka's trails map. Shows access from Mount Gold. Now, as part of the plan change, that access wouldn't be able to be continued for obvious reasons that the joining owners wouldn't take too kindly to people coming through their property. But with the expansion of the road into and formation of car parks will create opportunities for people now to be able to gain legal and good physical access to the north of Penn Bay. So, certainly quite a lot of thought into where to locate the car parks, and we've worked with Bike Wanaka as to the final position, which they seem to be happy with shifting them away further from where their main bike trails are, so that we have a cater for both walkers and bikers to make sure that, to reduce the conflict between those two user groups. Now, you raised the question about the staging
So back in 2008, 2009, when the global financial crisis hit, sale of sections pretty much stopped dead in the water. And the council and developers were quite pretty concerned at the time as, you know, the wheels were falling off and nothing was really happening in terms of work in Wanaka. So we looked at ways to allow parts of the site to develop and also to defer payment of development contributions. And to allow that to happen, we had to apply to change the staging condition to allow some flexibility in terms of around the number of lots that could be titled. And we obtained a condition which allows the subdivision to be staged in any order of lots, provided that each lot is fully serviced and has legal access. So the condition has remained and allows the development to be progressively subdivided. And in fact, we do have a staging plan, which was the original plan approved, which showed six stages. But in reality, we've probably carried out more like 20 sub-stages as a result of that staging condition. And that just allowed flexibility to build lots, but defer the payment of the development contributions and then individually title them as they were sold. And it helped a lot with cash flow through the years of, with Infinity with from 2009 to 2012. The original staging divided the vesting of the open space into, you'll see in the plan that are attached to my evidence, which is the reserve plan under appendix. Appendix B, which is land vesting to date, shows how the vesting of the reserve has progressed in stages, and they're more or less aligned to the number of lots that were titled. The first stage, there was 112 lots, and quite a significant amount of reserve land was vested. And as each stage progressed, the stages have got smaller and smaller. And that's more as a result of the number of sales that have happened. So it was by no means any ploy or mechanism to not vest the land, it's just as it's naturally developed across the site heading up into that corner. Now, and, some of the witnesses' evidence from council talked about stockpiles and leftover. We've really been working to that corner, so we've had to have an area for construction machinery and dealing with, you know, storage materials and managing the effects on site, etc. throughout. So there is an area that's left unfinished around Bull Ridge. That was all consented and approved as a stop yard area as under the original subdivision consent, as were all the earthworks that were carried out in the open space zone as part of the original earthworks. So, yeah, certainly, this is the nature of the site working towards that corner now. So, and we've finally almost got to it. Happy to answer any other questions.
Okay, thanks for that.
Just on the tracks, the majority of the three to needle track used to be outside.
It's quite confusing on that plan, although there's certainly a lot of tracks. The three to needle track starts down here in the adjacent Natapu block. It meets the Pembe site. I don't know if you walk down there, there's actually remnants of an old wire fence on site, and you can actually, Pete Smallfield can, if you need to locate yourselves on site, we'll go up here and do your site visit. But there is, I'd say, it's half the track, the three to needle track comes all the way through to here and then loops back this way. So I'd say, you know, there's probably 45% of the track is within inch of a land. There's also some other side tracks that drop down off the steep escarpment here. There's actually identified on the Pike Wanaka they call it a viewpoint, and it's near where the memorial was proposed to go originally for Bob Robertson. And that's probably one of the
nicest pass to look out over the wider outlet area. And there's tracks that drop off from down there. I believe there's also tracks proposed to link and even obviously redirect the Mount Gold access to link back down through to the outlet area. A series of zigzag tracks that I've seen on the ground, the formations that they've started to build through there. So, but in answer to your original question, yeah, there's quite a significant amount of that thread the needle is on Mitchell Bay, so almost half.
Just one question, and you may not be the right person to answer, but I'm prepared to ask it now before I forget. Looking at the landscape concept plan, one thing that struck me at least this morning on our site was that looking at considering a lot four, and you're looking to the west, out towards the Matokitaki area. At the moment, all of the community will screen that development in totality, both from looking out, but also from views back from the lake. From looking at the concept plan, there's nothing that would prevent a future owner wanting to, at least, make an application to remove that community development view shaft. Is there anything in the concept plan or in the rules that would prevent that? Mm-hmm. And I mean, that'll be in the open space, so.
It'll be well consent as in the title, so there'll be a consent as over.
To retain
the vegetation we have today.
Even the vegetation is not within, not on that lot, it's the vegetation outside that lot.
No,
you
can see notice will only secure the vegetation that's on that lot.
On that lot.
Yeah.
Because at the moment, looking at the landscape concept plan, overlay over your photograph, there's quite a lot of Kanuka on that western boundary.
Yes. That then would be held by the council.
Yeah, so we're subject to the space and rules, any rules around the movement of the vegetation. Yeah, that's one place. I shall ask Mr. Rispoli this one. The question, Mr. Botting, about the damage caused by the mountain bikers. Presumably, the tracks are defined. Presumably the damage or the erosion potential of future tracks is also exacerbated by people who want perhaps a bit more of an adventure and tend to go off track and create their own. And once one or two have gone that way, subsequent people will follow. And I guess that's a risk of respecting the water owns the land, isn't it?
Yes, there is. And there's actually quite a few existing tracks that were quite popular. There were ones down in, I'll show you the area. So from about here, where the main viewpoint is, there's kind of a lot of informal tracks that were used and people had created like jumps, platforms. I think there's even one platform that's still, like a wooden structure that's still in place. Their use has become less, perhaps as a result of the people that were using them were maybe more at the extreme end of mountain biking. And also, now that perhaps the Thread the Needle track has become more and more established, it's now the main track. So at least those other ones are not used as much. I do know next door in the Natahu block that the Office of Tree Settlements actually went and removed a lot of the structures that have been built. And whether that happened on this, I don't believe, but I think that maybe just some of those other formal tracks have kind of fallen into disrepair in lieu of the main track being used. But there is every chance that someone can go in there and trim out a new route through there discreetly while they're walking or biking. You know, it doesn't take much to open up the pathway through there.
And in the evidence, someone mentioned that one option open would be to simply not complete that part of the subdivision and not invest that part of the land and then thereby retain it, but in private ownership. Would that necessitate a further variation of the underlying consent if that part's not given effect to? Or would it simply become undeveloped and not completed?
Just simply become undeveloped
and not completed.
Technically, if they chose to develop all the remaining lots except for one lot at the end and leave the remaining balance lot, effectively, as the last of the open space plus one lot. And I believe the open space rules allow these boundaries to be fenced. So technically, they could put a a deer fence around the outside, similar to there's an owner in Karamako Park who owns two lots in there who's had a lot of people just free roaming over his land, and now he's fenced it off. But that's not something that Infinity is, would anticipate doing because of their reputation. So it's, but from a consent point of view, yeah, if a developer wasn't to that line, yeah, they could do that.
Okay, thanks for that. Can you just take us to the actual structure plan?
Yep.
This is the black and white one, isn't it? Just comparing that with, I guess it's that existing and proposed trail plan. Yeah, just trying to work out what is the sort of the new part, the new bits in terms of the walking and cycling routes, mm-hmm. trails, compared to what is going to be, you know, it's there at the moment and right. isn't being touched.
Okay, so on the structure plan, the dark line that we've got in the... this dark line through here is the thread the needle track.
Right. Yes.
So that's proposed not to be changed, apart from dealing with the issues of erosion down through the steeper section, which feeds into the consultation quite want to go and look at ways to improve that. Once we get to this point here, the thread and needle track actually leaves, and that's off Pen Bay land. That's probably a wider issue to deal with the dock, I believe, it's only still reserved. So
right.
that steep drop off,
yes.
the safety issues would have to be looked at that at some stage. The dotted line here, proposed walkway, on the trails plan, that's shown on this plan as the orange line.
Yes.
The proposed line.
Right.
Then the portion of the Mount Gold access which comes through from here would also then link in through onto this trail. Now, this trail was kind of developed when we had our safety fence through here because we're doing earthworks in that area. It's really in this part here is what's it's just a grass goat track, really, like a, you know, it's just for people, repeatedly walking over it. We'd look to quite easily form that up as a gravel track. And where it comes through on this part through here, where the Kanuka is, it's quite, it's would be very easy to spot on the top of the ridge line, it's not steep, and we can widen it out by just selectively trimming it.
Right.
The only portion of the existing bike track which would be affected by the walk is this Mount Gold access, which is not actually a legal, doesn't actually provide any legal access to anything. So we feel that that's a better served as being upgraded to a walkway. And when we get to the part where it joins the thread and needle track at this point, we would then diverge the track away to reduce that conflict of the walkers and bikers and loop it back round through into the other cul-de-sac here that would then create a nice circular loop for people to walk through Pen Bay and into
right.
that Pen Bay area.
Yes. So in terms of sort of the works that are, you know, set out in the structure plan, that's
yep.
obviously one of the main ones in terms of the open space
yes.
area, is
yep.
this formation of the walking track.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right.
And it's along a route that's quite well defined at the moment, mainly by walkers, I believe. Mountain bikers will tend to more use the thread and needle track. From my experience up here, walking my own dog, I tend to follow along this ridge line because it's quite a gentle grade, and it's probably the easiest part to walk through, which you may have taken yourselves today along through, quite flat along through here, and then link back down to the future road here. I think it'll create quite a nice wee circuit.
Yes, okay. And there's a little bit of a diversion of the bike track just at the south end there.
Yes, this one over here is by
yeah.
the closed car park.
Yes.
Now that was quite a bit of back and forth debate. Originally when we did the original ODP, council was very keen to see a car parking as far down here as possible
right.
to service this wider area. Jump forward 10 years and different people now involved, different views. The preferred location is to have it up here so that we can get better separation of bikers and walkers. That would necessitate forming a small single track trail to link in with the what's called the Venus Landing down here, as well as having encouraging walkers to come up through this way away from the
right.
In reality, you form a track, people parking with their running shoes on, walking shoes on, myself, I park here and pretty much go wherever I feel like.
Follow your nose. Yeah.
It's the same as everybody else that walks.
That's right. Okay. On the plan, they're showing the car park toilets,
yep.
Car park either end toilets.
Mm-hmm.
Are they agreements to provide those facilities that sit outside the structure plan?
On the current ODP, there's a requirement to create these car parks.
Okay.
There's never any discussion to create toilet facilities. That's something that council would assess at the time. But as part of this proposal, Infinity's prepared to put those facilities in now.
Right.
Yeah.
But the car park's part of the ODP. That's
the current proposal was to put these two car parks in.
So right.
The early car park was located down over here. Just to back up a step, when we did the earthworks, we actually formed all the road networks and placed metal to stabilise it all. So that's what you can see in the aerial photo here, is the original location of where the roads were going to go. And there was a car park here and over here. So we've now tweaked the car park rather than being in lot 4. We're now going to shift it to the other end of the top set,
right.
In the same
condition. There's a notation on the plan about fencing. MacArthur Post, Warrantar and Wire. So it's sort of setting out a fencing typology, if I think.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the intention again, is that that be... I mean, sorry, this may be more of a planning issue about how the structure plan gets implemented. But I maybe you just talk through that briefly.
Well, what we've found works best in the previous stages that we've invested or created lots that are adjacent to... recreation reserve is to fence the boundary as part of the development rather than leaving it to the future owners. And that really sets in place where that boundary line is and stops that creep, so to speak, for people using the reserve for their own purposes. We've found on a lot of the ground at stage 3A, 3B, the use of either a low wooden fabric carpet fence, 400 mils high, or a post and Waratah and wire fence. Most appropriate way to fence off that open space reserve.
Right.
And it's worked well, hasn't it? You know, we've been able to, most of the boundary lines have been clear up to here. So what would be proposed along through around the proposed rezoning area, from this point here, would be a post and wire fence around the outside, all the way through to here. And then where the walkway is proposed to go, we'd use the fabric carpet post rail.
Right, so they're actually
there's two different types of fences that are not used.
And then are people held to that fence in terms of consent conditions or some sort of requirement?
Now, there is a good point. I'll have to check whether the consent notice covers the ongoing requirement for that fence to start base. Certainly, someone could perhaps go and attach a different type of fence to it, but there is limitations in the reserve testing approval that was obtained from council as to the height of the fence. It wasn't to be higher than 1.2 metres. Whether or not it had in the original testing resolution the type of fence, I'd have to check on those details.
Right.
But that's certainly something that could be covered by a consent notice condition, that fence that's installed now would have to remain in,
right.
As that style of fence, and not certainly wouldn't want to end up with a 2 metre high wooden paling fence, simply spoil the boundary line.
Yeah. Did you have a question?
I see there's three of the sections, 20, 29, the vegetation that extends from the proposed lots outside to the fence.
That's probably something that Gary can cover and Ben. I believe those are more to do with providing additional screening from the proposed tracks of the view of the proposed lots.
And Question I had about, there's an earthworks plan, or sort of indicative earthworks plan.
Yeah, obviously you're subject to the detailed design and approval. Yeah.
Right, which I think does get referenced in the plan change words, I think. Talks about sort of, you know, yep. sort of work within these earthwork profiles. If I've got that right, that's some of the lots, not all of them, of course. Can you just talk us through a little bit about that earthworks plan and how
so
you got to that?
The earthworks that we looked at on this plan was to do with formation of roading and right-of-ways.
Yeah.
And also to create the building platforms on lots 4, 20, 21 and 22. And the reason for that is tied in also with the replanting. To do the earthworks now on those more sensitive lots allows the final earthworks batters to be created and then planted out and revegetated. The other lots in lots 8, 9, 10, 11 and 12 would be subject to the normal low density earthworks rules at the time someone goes to develop a building on that, and if they breached the new rules in terms of volumes and areas, they'd have to apply for their own separate resource consent on an individual basis.
Yes.
What Infinity has found though is that a lot of buyers just prefer to walk onto a flat section and limit the earthworks, and I think there's a bit of a debate coming actually in terms of with low impact earthworks. And I've seen it in the Karamoko Park development where it was portrayed as low impact earthworks as part of the original subdivision, and they left a lot of the mounds on the sections. Well, you drive back there now and there's nothing left there at all. In fact, it's probably a worse outcome where there's some of the houses have ended up below the road as a result of not doing some earthworks. So there may be scope to look at doing more earthworks, which would set in place the better outcome for a purchaser's point of view on some of those other lots, and so that the earthworks can then be controlled in a better manner by one contractor.
Right.
And carried out and you know, stabilised.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's certainly. So what's shown on this plan is just the what's needed to create roading and the earthworks around where the vegetation areas are going to be planted.
Right, so that's its purpose, main purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering, I mean, that, like, for example, lots 7 to 12, I mean, that's a bit of a bank, I think, isn't it, that we saw. The row of houses not yet built on that eastern side of Infinity Drive, and then the lots proposed are more on the
slope there. It certainly makes sense to do the earthworks as one cohesive one go, and that can allow you to control the effects.
I guess I was just trying to understand what sort of earthworks may occur on that slope, given, as you say, there's a general sort of desire to go for slab on ground, or, you know.
It does vary. I mean, some people prefer a steeper section. I mean, you know, myself, I'd quite like to have a section with more elevation, so I like the basement garage with a house on top.
Yeah.
But generally, what we've found recently is that most buyers like a reasonably flat section. So it's a cost thing as well. The cost of foundations goes up, the steeper it is.
Yes.
So either or, I mean, if there were a buyer of, say, lot 10, for example, which has got minimal earthworks on it, just associated with, at this stage, the form of the right-of-way, they're going to have to look at either building benching in the site or as part of their building consent, or the developer could, for example, do a lot of that work and they can just walk onto it and not have to have the extra expense. It's certainly something to look at. But that's getting down to quite detail, which is normally going to cover as part of the resource consent and as part of the detailed engineering design.
Yeah. And just so I understand all this all perfectly correctly, we're on the structure plan for lots 4, 20, 21 and 22, building platform level. So that sets that building platform level at that raised level. And so you can't go up, you can't build it up more than that, or can't go below that. You're stuck at that level in terms of your height of your building is always measured off that point.
You could certainly go lower. You could certainly dig out like a basement garage, but the actual height of the building will be set. You won't be able to go any higher, and that's set above mean sea level, so there's controls around making sure that someone doesn't just sneakily try to add another metre of ground and build on top of it.
Yes.
As part of
the ongoing consent notice, or even if they had to get additional resource consent, you know, we often have to provide a survey certificate confirming that the building's been constructed to the right level and the right height and stuff. Yeah. We've had the old one where a builder's gone ahead and done it without getting us in, and it's been proved to be quite costly for them.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, I can imagine. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Final question I had was just in relation to the open space, the figures that you had there, and investing in open space. That table, that was helpful, thank you. That table on page 6, table 1. And again, it may be something that Mr. Greenway, maybe the council staff, ask a bit about. I mean, sometimes there's a sort of an unders and overs goes on, of course, across the whole city, sort of saying, well, over here we'll probably get less open space, for whatever reasons, because of the physical characteristics, but we'll be able to make up for it over here, you know, because the land's flat for good for a sports field, or, you know, nice landscape. You've sort of given this figure sort of internally, as it were, to the development area.
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, stepping back from that, do you think, was there any sort of sense of unders and overs going across the whole of sort of the Wanaka area, saying, well, okay, over, you know, through whatever area it is, three parks or something, we're going to get less, therefore it's better off to get more over here?
No, I don't believe there's that level of strategic. At least there wasn't that when we originally looked at the plan statement. It may have changed now with more recent work.
Right.
You know, I'm not familiar with that wider view.
Yeah. Okay, great, thank you. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just conscious that we've talked quite a lot about tracks and trails, and I wondered about bringing Mr. Greenaway up forward, just to round that out, and then leave us with Mr. Hitchie, Dr. Greenley, and Ms. Taylor after lunch, perhaps. Might work out well. I'm happy with that.
Yep.
Right. Greenaway, you're up.
I can just read a few paragraphs from my notes. I was involved in the 2006 hearings for the original proposal.
Right.
Which was interesting. There was a strong reluctance to take the zoopling at that stage.
Yes.
So it's an interesting position there. So just in terms of my evidence, I'll start with paragraph 15, just my basic findings. So based on my review of the plan change application and having visited the site, there will be in fact no change to the existing scale of trail and track access to the setting for walkers, dog walkers, runners and mountain bikers. As can be seen by Appendix 1, which is the proposed trail plan, which is A3 now. The current mountain bike tracks are shown on the Bike Wanaka map almost entirely outside the plan change area. Here is one section of track shown on the Bike Wanaka plan, which crosses the corner of Lot 35 through Lot 26, which will be replaced by a new track from the car park next to Lot 26 to Venus Landing. Mr. Bike has been through all those changes. The existing more formal single track mountain bike track, the Thread the Needle, will not be affected by the plan change. Existing 1.5 metre wide gravel walking track shown in the landscape concept plan behind Lot 26 will also not be affected. New 1.5 metre wide gravel walking tracks are proposed. Locations are shown in the plans. Spring planting will mitigate views of new residences from the existing proposed tracks, such that the amenity experience of future users of the open space zone will be a high value one, and Mr. Espy covers that in his review. The reduction in the extent of the open space zone will result in a reduction in the scale of open space available for recreation and will reduce potential future trail development options. However, these would likely only include a limited scale mountain bike trail network compared to that available at the plantation or Steppy Forest. I can see consider it unlikely that this land, whether or not it is rezoned, will be the subject of significant trail development in the future, given the preference to separate walkers and cyclists and the desire to maintain local natural values. And then just skipping ahead to the financial contribution, that my paragraph 26, to address the residual effect of a loss of development opportunity, the applicant has proposed a rule requiring payment of a financial contribution on a per lot basis for the purpose of development of tracks and trails within the Wanaka area. It actually came to me to work out what that should be. I based this amount on the capital cost of developing the equivalent of two trails along the width of the Peninsula Bay development, which is approximately 650 metres. My experience, trail construction costs in similar settings to grade one cycling standard average around $100 per metre, not including bridges and culverts. On a per metre basis, this results in a total contribution of $130,000, per lot contribution of 5.17. That $100 per metre is probably a little bit generous for this time setting. Probably you could not even be able to get double the length of the track, but it just depends on how steep it is, whether you do need to put a culvert or something like that. So that's the nub of what I've presented.
I don't know if I answer this, but we've got two interest groups here as far as the tracks and trails are concerned. One's the Exploring Tracks Network, the other is White Monica.
Yes.
Who do we listen to?
Both of them. I mean, it's interesting with mountain bike clubs, and I do quite a bit of reserve management planning in areas where Victoria Park in Wellington is a good example, where you have mountain bike clubs with a keen interest in developing trail networks, and they really have a focus on more and more trails.
And they get ahead of, from a council perspective.
Yes,
they can get ahead of things and get back for a whole lot of stuff.
Very enthusiastic. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yep. And individual club members not particularly following what the club wants as well, so quite often can't blame the club. They've just got a keen couple of people who really do like putting in an extra link here and there, and that happens. My issue with this particular setting is that if I was writing a reserve management plan for it, because of the soil and the visibility and the ONL status, I would be trying to control track development to a limited number of tracks in there. So I wouldn't go through and say that if there was substantial sudden increase in demand, that as a default you would go through and grab this area and suddenly turn it into a mountain bike park, because it's just not that sort of process yet. But it's perfectly appropriate to have, a few trails going through, but not a sticky forest style. Yeah. But good luck on your future management random development of mountain bike tracks. Yes. Yeah. Actually, well, I mean, we have done things like proposed track development freezes. I remember the early days in Dunedin doing that quite honestly. That was Walkers in those days. And the clubs have generally respected that. They've realised that they need to come up from council and funding support to continue developing their network. And if an area is getting degraded, then actually formally agreeing to a freeze and making sure they publicise that with members does have an effect.
The Mobile Hill, we have areas there that are of concern at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, it's a freeze in lieu of having a strategy. So if this area is zoned and you went ahead and made it a recreation reserve or a scenic reserve, maybe more appropriately, you would say we're not. You may not build anything until we have a plan in place, and then we will only build a plan. Yeah.
It's stuck on private ownership, links on. There's all sorts of ways you can do that.
Yeah.
It appears to me that this open space zoning that is currently on in the plan it could have a number of sort of reasons behind it, and the sort of the tracks and the trails and that sort of active recreation side of it is presumably one angle. Presumably it's not the only angle, though, in terms of why this area would be open space, in terms of, I mean, you go through your mind, there's a sort of a scenic role, there's a sort of an amenity role, I guess. There's just a physical sort of, you know, there's room for plants and,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
trees and biota and all the rest of it to, yeah, to exist. I mean, are they all valid?
Yes, yep. And the separation bit as well. I mean,
separation.
The scale of the setting,
yeah,
is of value, which is why, I mean, I've gone through and said there's a residual effect. Even though you're not going to curtail access and use of the site, that sense of separation and scale is an adverse effect. So, mm, hence there's a compensation component to it.
Right. But that's, I guess, just looking at the different components. I mean, what I took from the council sort of reporting, I guess, was this question about sort of the, you might call it an opportunity cost. Mm. Land at the moment, open space, exactly what it might be used for in the future, or the values that it may have that are determinant yet, but it could be more walking and cycling, it could be technically, it could be more revegetation.
Yeah.
You know, a whole host of things you can think about, you know, as open space provides. And what's been sort of lost through this, not so much about the walking and cycling part of it, perhaps, but it's more the sort of the opportunity for these other values or uses or activities, yeah, to occur. And what we've sort of got, I guess, what we've got in front of us, sorry to go through, but there's the tracks and trails part of it, you know, a new trail, which is helpful, understand that. You've talked about a financial contribution, which is another trail. There is a bit of revegetation going on, and I guess we'll talk about that. But in sort of this, I guess, the sort of amenity side of it, where's the sort of, you know, the trade-off or the mitigation from that side of things?
Well, the key question is, would you throw in a whole lot more tracks in that area? So in the future, if you had that, yes, extra area of open space, would you just keep, yeah, crisscrossing those tracks?
No, yes.
You wouldn't.
No.
You wouldn't just keep, you know, throwing more trails in,
no,
there, because what are you doing that for?
Yes.
You've created an appropriate loop in there. You know, with this proposal, you've separated a walking and cycling opportunity. You've got a good mountain biking network through there.
Mm.
Unless you were going to go through and say, okay, we want to have a mountain bike park, yeah, with a whole lot of zigzags. And there are areas, you know, you go up to Auckland where there's quite a high demand for mountain bike parks in limited areas. You know, hundreds of kilometres of track in very limited spaces.
Yeah.
It's very impressive.
Yeah.
But I just cannot see, because of that type of setting, whether you would go through and turn it into a mountain bike park. I just, you know, if I was writing a reserve management plan for it, that would,
yeah,
not be,
yes,
my concept. Because you actually won't be able to go through there and have an experience in that Kānuku forest without suddenly meeting bikes crossing over their track and jumping through,
yeah,
which is the issue with Victoria Park.
Right.
So the scale of development in the future, to my mind, wouldn't be much more than you would have with this development proposal in place. You would just have an extra scale, and you might have more wander at will opportunities, so people just walking on the track and going through and, you know, chasing their dog.
Yes.
But not a curtailment of the trail development.
No, no, I can understand that the trail development is sort of an arena, you know, the opportunity cost on that being more limited, or whatever you might call it, yeah. And we've yet to hear about the evidence about the revegetation, but I can understand what's been, you know, more,
yeah,
revegetation potentially coming through this. That again may or may not happen. It just remains open space. I guess it's just that sort of that other pot, you might call it, sort of values associated. You talk about separation,
yeah,
which is sort of a visual thing. Sometimes open space land is just sort of intrinsic value. It's just unbuilt land, which helps,
yeah,
you know, the general amenity area.
And
that's the bit that sort of seems to be, you know, being,
yeah,
dropped off or lost, for a better word. Yeah.
It is a tricky thing. And I was trying to work out last night, actually, when I had the long drive up from Invercargill, about how you would measure change,
mm,
in this area. And, of course, it's a bit of a trick. If you go through it in the future and you've accepted the plan change and you've got the mitigations in place, the trail developments, and you went through and you did a survey of people using that setting, and you say, do you like it? They'd say, yeah, it's great.
Yes.
And then if you didn't do it, and you did a survey and said, what do you think of it? That's it, yeah, it's great.
Yes.
So you're not going to get a significant measurable change in people's perception of the amenity in that area unless they sit back and people are looking at it now and say, from a personal perspective, I would prefer to have more space in the future, and that's what I was expecting.
Mm.
And it's not at the scale that I was expecting.
Yeah.
But if, you know, if you try to go through and say, have we delivered in 10 years' time with the development in place, a quality recreation setting, yes, you would end up still with that tick.
Mm-hmm.
It's just different from what you would get now. So it's a real challenge in terms of going through and saying that there is a, you know, a quantifiable change in recreation amenity in that place, because you wouldn't be able to quantify it further down the track.
No.
But at this time, I am saying, okay, yes, you could potentially be curtailing the opportunity to put in a couple of extra tracks in there, hence a financial contribution requirement.
Yes, I understand that. I mean, just on that topic, again, this is probably more a planning issue. Financial contributions, do you normally have to have some sort of project, though, ready to go to justify the financial contribution? I mean, the worry is that money will just disappear off into some sort of jam jar in the council coffers. That's right, yeah. No, but that's often the argument back when financial contributions are proposed on a development. They said, well, hang on, but where's the project? We know it's actually going to be spent.
Yes, well, it's a tricky one. But I've worked on setting reserve contributions for planning processes.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily on a specific project basis. It is that, okay, here we've got expectation of so many people in this area, and at the moment we're providing a level of service of X metres of track.
Yes.
This is an increase of X percentage, we'll apply that and then multiply it up and say yes. But we don't have a track design network for the entire district set out, but it's a pro rata contribution.
Yeah, and I guess in this case it's been offered through the plan change, so we sort of don't need to get too far into that sort of argument.
Yeah, I mean, I could imagine if you made this contribution to ATM or to Biotica, that, you know,
yes,
have some ideas.
No, that's great. Thank you. This plan here, sorry, this is not really you, this is Plan Change 15, is it? Came out of Plan Change 15.
Yes.
Yeah, which is in the evidence, isn't it?
Yes.
Can someone just sort of explain the map?
Oh, okay,
so maybe you can
pick
it
up. Sorry, if you've got a mind,
waiting. Yeah, that'd be great.
If you're familiar with that. And
yeah.
Most closely involved with that, I think, of all the
work
that we've got here.
Oh, okay, that'd be brilliant.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, Mr. Greenway.
Now, it was my intention to put Mr. Exley before Dr. Bramley, just so that you had the landscape and then the vegetation within the landscape.
Right.
But Dr. Bramley might be quicker, and I'm aware that you did want the opportunity to read the Stevens evidence before you heard from Mr. Exley, which we're going to do over the lunch break. So if you've got no difficulty with Dr. Bramley coming up and talking about vegetation, and then we can have Mr. Esby after lunch.
Yes.
Or we could take an early lunch break.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I wouldn't mind the opportunity to have a look at that evidence that's come in. I haven't had a chance to do that.
Right.
And I think, given who it's come in from, I think it'd be quite useful to just have a scan that before we hear from Dr. Bramley, if that's okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, what time do we normally sort of have for lunch?
Scheduled break is between 1 and 2, I think.
Right. Well, we've got plenty of time, aren't we? We're going well, so no need to rush things, isn't there? So that's right.
Extended lunch.
Yes, exactly. Extended lunch break.
Conscious of the, frost and the descending, as to where we get towards the end of the day. I don't want anybody here to get, stuck getting home.
No, that's right. Yeah. Well, I'm happy either way, so. Do you want to do 2 o'clock, or do you want to make it 1:45?
Let's see, we'll have to run.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll come back. We'll take an hour now.
Yes.
Yeah, that'll be fine.
Yes,
right? Yeah.
So we'll
come aim to get back about 1:45.
Lovely.
1:45, is that
all right? And hear from Mr. Esby.
Okay, great.
Yes, thank you.